Hey, TYT, I'm Nomi Konst. We have a special guest today out of Iowa. Pete D'Alessandro is a candidate for the congressional district, this District 3 in Iowa, which includes Des Moines, and it borders Nebraska and Missouri. A very interesting district. It is a conservative-leaning district, but there is a heated primary, which is pretty unusual for a conservative-leaning district. There's somewhere around six candidates right now for the Democratic line for the primary, and Pete is an interesting candidate because he has already gotten the endorsement at this stage of not just Our Revolution and Our Revolution Iowa, the Central Iowa chapter, but the National Nurses Union, a People for Bernie Sanders, and why would I bury the lead, Bernie Sanders himself. Bernie Sanders has been sending a lot of people emails on behalf of Pete D'Alessandro. Perhaps that's because he's known for being progressive, but he also worked on the 2016 presidential campaign for Bernie Sanders in Iowa, that important state, where I think some would say he probably could have, should have, would have won it. He also worked as a state director in Indiana and Oklahoma, and he was the national delegate director for Bernie Sanders from Vermont later on in the campaign. But way back when, which I'd love to talk about, he also worked for Paul Wellstone. If you remember Paul Wellstone, he was a progressive hero, and a lot of people had hopes for him, but he tragically passed away in a plane accident in the early 2000s. So, Pete, thank you so much for joining us. You and I go back.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nomi. It's great to be here.
Yeah, very exciting. So, you know, you're like a campaign operative. Is that it? Are people wondering, how would you switch roles?
Not like. I am a campaign operative, and I'm proud of it. I've been an organizer for 25 years. Organizing not just candidates in campaigns, but organizing issues and things like that that I believe in. And so I don't think it's as it's not the most normal thing that you see in politics, but it's happened enough where it's not totally out of the realm. And I've actually think, you know, we've actually elected quite a few really good legislators throughout our history who started out as campaign organizers of. Certainly Paul Wellstone would be a pretty good example of someone that came out of an organizing roots, Bernie Sanders, that came out of organizing first and then used elected politics, which has to be part of the process, and then did it themselves and obviously done it well. But there's been others. So it is unique, but we don't think it's the most unheard of thing.
We have presidents. Happened. We, the mayor of New York. It's much more common. It's probably, I don't know. I guess personally, I don't understand why it's as odd when you have lobbyists become elected officials and bank executives, and we don't turn our heads and say, why is a banking executive representing progressive beliefs? But
yeah, and actually, I think in a lot of ways, what we're hearing around the district, which I guess we knew intuitively, this is one of the reasons we decided to do it, is you kind of get the best of both worlds in the sense that, I understand the process. Mm-hmm. I understand what it takes. But, as an organizer, you're also not a career politician. And so you're able to mix both of those things that I think people are looking for. You know, what we're learning, sadly, away from the terrible politics of the man is that much of the problems that President Trump has every day is just centered around the idea that he doesn't know how the system works.
Right.
Never cared how it worked, wasn't intellectually curious enough to figure out how it worked. And so when that happens, you get the negative twofer of the non-politician who doesn't understand what's going on. I think the Bernie Sanders and the Paul Wellstones and the Mayor de Blasio's and folks like that are the positive of it, which is what we're trying to be, where you understand the organizing, you understand the government, the politics part of it, you care about it, and you're able to merge both things because you're not necessarily tied to the everyday government part of things that has been really some of the things that we've needed to fight over the course of the last generation.
So why do you think, given how conservative this district is, and in terms of Cook, what's the number? Is it R plus?
Well, yeah, and I'm going to push back a little bit on that.
Yeah.
I actually think this is a district that is truly a take back district. Is truly not just that we can flip it this year, but I think it really is a toss up, mm-hmm. in everyone's sense of the word. If you look at the district, Barack Obama won it twice.
Wow.
He won the actual district. And then if you took the counties that were that make up the district and if they had been together in 2008 when he ran, I think he would have won it by almost 10 points. Okay. the other thing I think that's important is if you look at the district, Donald Trump did win it by 4 points. But if you look at the places where he ran up the score, so to speak, to get to a 4-point win in November, a lot of those counties were counties that we did, meaning the Bernie Sanders campaign, did very well in, if not won, on caucus night. So I think when you put those things together and you get to the realization that Barack Obama won the district twice, that in a lot of the places where Trump did well in the fall, the Bernie Sanders did very well in the winter. I think it's not as conservative leaning. And the other thing I would say is it is almost 1/3 independent now, the district, in terms of registration. We do have voter registration here in Iowa. And a third of the folks, about a third of the folks don't consider themselves Democrat or Republicans. I think there's a message in that. One of the reasons that Bernie Sanders was able to do well on caucus night was the appeal to independents. Mm-hmm. So that alone tells us that those issues appeal to independents, and independents are the key here. I think a lot of independents here are actually left of center.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that they don't pick a party is for the last generation, I think that's kind of a pock on both their houses kind of situation where they agree with us on almost everything we talk about, but they just don't feel comfortable with being associated right now. That's one of the other things we have to start doing over the course of this next few cycles is we not only have to stand for progressive values. I think that's the way to win. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's as controversial as some folks might think. I don't think you have to moderate anything, and we certainly shouldn't be nuancing anything in terms of what matters. But I think if we do that, you'll see a lot of those independents coming back because the Democratic Party will be a place that they will feel comfortable with again. And it won't be the same old that we've seen over the last generation.
Do you think that the Cook metrics and the polling that's being done out there is sort of based on the wrong assumptions? Meaning if you and other organizers on the ground feel that the districts are more progressive leaning, where in the polling are we messing up?
I don't know if it's messing up. I think polls can only poll who they're talking to.
Mm.
So you know, if you're going to do a poll about a primary, you're going to talk to likely primary voters. And you're going to have to go through all those screens to get to that. Look, I saw it in three places. I saw it here as the campaign coordinator. I was in Oklahoma when we woke up on election day and the polls and the experts and all that kind of stuff were saying that we weren't going to win there. And then my favorite I talk about is I woke up on Indiana, and it's actually not in this room I'm in right now, but on my office wall, I have it framed now. You know, I woke up the morning of the Indiana primary, and I was told that by one group that did such things that we had less than 10% chance of winning the Indiana primary, which we wound up winning by 4 or 5 points that day. Yeah. So I just think that it's changing so fast. And the issues that are resonating with so many people that are not, quote unquote, the usual suspects, that it's not that the polls, the polling numbers are polling correctly still who they're polling.
Right.
They're just not able to grab the amount of people that are energized by issues like a Medicare for all, that are energized by issues like we've got to guarantee that every working person has a $15 minimum wage. Those type of issues, those folks aren't being talked to. And the folks that are being energized to get reintegrate or get into the political process because of those issues are often not talked to in these polls.
Well, I guess I asked that because, you know, a couple of days ago there was a memo that was leaked from the DCCC. And you know, you're running for Congress and you're a Democrat. I don't know how comfortable you are speaking about the DCCC right now, but there was a memo that was leaked and there was a lot of pushback because some of the guidance that they were given and they were giving other candidates was based off of some faulty polling, some intentionally faulty polling, some misrepresentative polling. And, you know, that shapes how candidates run for office. They were suggesting that candidates should, you know, steer clear of Medicare for All and send out thoughts and prayers after a mass shooting, work out very well for a lot of Democrats.
Look, what you just described, mm-hmm. and I don't know about this, believe it or not, I don't get on a lot of Triple C phone calls, and they have not been unfair to us here by any stretch. Mm-hmm. I don't want to imply that. But, you know, we're running our campaign,
right?
And we're running it about what we want to talk about and what we think needs to be talked about. But what you just brought up is actually a specific example of the larger problem. Is maybe, now this might sound like a really nutty idea, maybe candidates running for office shouldn't be polling things to see what they should be saying. Maybe candidates should be running on what they believe in and seeing if those issues and those causes can get enough votes to win. And then even if you don't, at the end of the day, you still stood for something that you felt needed to be stood for. So I think part of the reason that a third of the people in this district are independents is because we've had too much of the poll-tested candidates, the poll-tested, how am I going to talk about an issue? You know, the one thing that drives me the craziest, and I'm going to get real specific with you on here, is when I hear a Democrat talk about, you know, I just want to make sure that I can be part of the solution so that everyone has access to health care. That drives me crazy. That is a poll-tested way of not having to say how you're going to solve the problem. Mm. Now, I think the problem's solved with Medicare for All. That's how we say it. We don't nuance it. We don't talk about it any other way. But when you hear people say that, that goes back to this problem of these poll-tested, don't offend anybody because you might be able to get the 51% if you don't offend enough people. And then we're going to have power, and then we're going to be in, and we might be able to incrementally do some, you know, decent things. I think we have to start. One of the things we talk about in the theme of this campaign is we have to stop trying to just win elections. Oh, a wave might bring in the Democrats in November. Oh, if we say it this way, we won't offend anybody. Mm-hmm. We have to start trying to win the future again. And if we start trying to win the future, I think we're going to win elections. Don't get me wrong about that. But part of that is not poll testing everything and not dumping information out there so that people can find the four things they might agree with. But you don't have to talk specifically or engage the voter, because believe it or not, maybe every now and then through these disagreements, we actually come to the solution because we're actually talking to people. And maybe we actually get a few people that weren't with us from the beginning to start realizing that what we're talking about could be the way that we win the future. And it's not just these 30,000 foot, let me talk about an issue so you know I care about it type of stuff. So I hope that answers your question. I know it's but that's one of the things that drives me crazy, is that we've got to move away from that. And if we move away from it, we'll see less and less districts where a third of the people are independent. Mm-hmm. We're going to see more and more people saying, yeah, I'll put that D next to my name again, because they're standing for the things that matter to me, matter to my community, matter to my family. And they're not just trying to win an election to keep a brand at the top of the shelf.
You have a lot of competition right now in your race.
Yep.
I'm not familiar with every single one of the candidates, but my guess is given how many folks are out there right now doing exactly what you said, sort of creating the illusion of being a progressive without actually like putting their foot down and saying, I am for this, being caught between two worlds. The process in Iowa is a little different than most states. How can you make sure that your affirmative progressive message stands out in this muddled process? Maybe you could talk a little bit about the process to our audience
sure.
as well.
Well, Iowa, I believe there's only one other state that does it this way. So there's very few folks that would be listening that would have experienced this. But Iowa has a law that if you don't get 35% of the vote in a primary, we don't go to runoff. We actually have a convention. And those are folks that are elected. Actually, the process already started. The rest of the country watches it every 4 years. But in off years, people are still elected at their precinct caucuses to go to their county conventions as delegates. And then at their county conventions, they're elected to go to their congressional district conventions as delegates. Mm-hmm. Quite simply, there's going to be 270 some odd folks that will be elected as delegates to their congressional district convention. If nobody gets 35% of the vote in June, about 2 weeks later, there'll be a convention to nominate the Democratic nominee. So there's a two-pronged process. Now, we're trying very hard. We're working as hard as we can to get our message out. We think it's a message that resonates and to win in June. But if you don't win in June, you have to go fight it out at a convention. And something I want to be clear about, I say this everywhere I go, there are five other folks running in this race. I'm running a race about what I believe in, what I think we should stand for. I'll let the others speak for themselves and speak for their experiences of why they think they would be the proper nominee. But the one thing I do say is that I have a lot of respect for all the folks I'm running against in this race. And clearly any one of them would be a better option than David Young is in terms of the things he votes for. And that's something that I think we have to be very clear about. You know, David Young is a very interesting congressman. We have a guy here in Iowa that everyone knows named Steve King. Mm-hmm. And people know of Steve King nationally because he's a bigot. He's not ashamed for some reason of being a bigot. He's very loud about being a bigot. And he will climb up to the tallest mountain and let the whole world know that he's a bigot. Well, what's interesting, I think, is the style is what makes folks realize that this guy's there, the Steve King character. David Young actually has a worse voting record. He's actually voted with Donald Trump 98% of the time since Donald Trump's been president. So in a lot of ways, politicians like David Young, who you don't really know who they are, mm-hmm. because he does have a good personality. He does treat you with respect if you go to his town hall meeting. But then he goes back to Washington and he doesn't vote with the respect that we need to build our state, to build our society. So the fact that his record is basically Trump's biggest enabler, I think the fact that we don't look at him in the same way because he's not as loud and he's kind of masked on who he really is makes him more dangerous. And that's one of the reasons we have to take him on, and we have to take him on with a bold agenda.
Do you have a sense of how scared he is right now?
I don't know. I've met the man a couple times. I would doubt he would remember when he met me. I don't know if he's scared or not, but he should be. Because
you're the Bernie Sanders candidate right now. Well, so that's something to be scared of. Come on.
But you know what's interesting is that Congressman, one of the things I tell folks, and you brought up Paul earlier, is when I'm out on the, when I was first deciding whether to do this, and I think we talked really early on when I was doing an exploratory, mm-hmm. and I would go, you know, we have 16 counties in the district, and regardless of what county I was in, whether I was at a Democratic Party event, whether it was at an event we had put together, whether it was at a nonpartisan event, whether it was in a library or in a auditorium, or whether it was at a coffee house, as I was leaving, I would always hear in the back of my mind, I tell people this, in the back of my mind, I could hear Paul's voice. Mm. And he used to have this line, he'd say, you know, sometimes in order to win a fight, you got to pick a fight. And I just, it just hit me that this guy was someone who needed a fight picked with him. Hmm. And one thing I will guarantee progressives, if I'm honored to be the nominee, he will know in November that he was in a fight. That's the one thing I will guarantee to everyone who is interested in progressive politics, everyone who's interested in winning for the future and winning for the right reasons. This guy will know he's in a fight. I don't know if he's had many in his life. I don't know him that well. But he'll know he was in one if I'm the nominee. I guarantee you that.
Oof. Those are some fighting words. No? I would love to end it on that note, but I have to ask you one question.
Well, I'm going to say, there are so many important things. They are fighting words because there's so many things worth fighting for right now. We're right on the cusp. We can mm-hmm. do this. We can elect enough people around this country to guarantee that health care is no longer just a privilege. Mm-hmm. That it's a birthright, because we know it is, and we can do that with a Medicare for all system. There's enough people out there fighting for that. We can elect people that know that the one thing I say about the $15 hour minimum wage, I get it. It's an economic issue. Of course it's an economic issue. It's a social justice issue. Mm-hmm. If you work 40 hours a week, your family should live in dignity. End of statement. The debate starts at $15 an hour. If you do everything you're supposed to do, you work hard, you should be able to go to secondary education, whether it's a university, whether it's a college, whether it's a trade school, whether it's an apprenticeship program, and you shouldn't have to worry about being buried in debt when you come out of any of that. So it is worth fighting for, and it is worth, because it's the society. Look, 100 years from now, when they look back on us, they're not going to say, oh, there was a really bad Congress and the Congress didn't get it. 100 years from now, 150 years from now, when they're judging us, they're judging all of us. They're mm-hmm. judging what we made happen for this society. And so they're not going to nuance it and say, well, there weren't enough congressmen that got elected. It will be the American people, the American society that will be judged on it. So I think it's worth, those are things that are definitely worth fighting for.
Pete D'Alessandro, running for Congress in Iowa's 3rd District. We're going to be watching. The convention's coming up and exciting. Right?
And it's Pete, yeah, and it's PeteForIowa.com. My someone's looking at me right now saying I'm supposed to say that. So
okay.
I'm getting used to that, all right?
You got it. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks. Always great. All right, Naomi.